teeth and armored with immortality. Can no one stop her?
Zeus could, or your father, if they wished to. But why would they? Monsters are a boon to gods. Imagine all the prayers. My throat had closed over. Those men she had eaten were sailors, as Glaucus had been, ragged, desperate, worn thin with fear. All dead. All of them cold smoke, marked with my name.
Hermes was watching me, his head cocked like a curious bird.
He was waiting for my reaction. Would I be skimmed milk for crying, or a harpy with a heart of stone? There was nothing between. Anything else did not fit cleanly in the laughing tale he wanted to spin of it. I let my hand fall on my lion's head, felt her great, hard skull beneath my fingers. She never slept when Hermes was there. Her eyes were lidded and watchful.
Scylla was never satisfied with just one, I said.
He smiled. A bitch with a cliff for a heart.
I meant to tell you, he said. I heard a prophecy of you. I had it from an old seeress who had left her temple and was wandering the fields giving fortunes.
I was used to the swift movements of his mind, and now I was grateful for them.
And you just happened to be passing when she was speaking of me?
Of course not.
I gave her an embossed gold cup to tell me all she knew of Circe, daughter of Helios, witch of Aia.
Well?
She said that a man named Odysseus, born from my blood, will come one day to your island.
And?
That's it, he said.
That's the worst prophecy I've ever heard, I said. He sighed.
I know. I think I lost my cup.
I did not dream of him, as I said. I did not braid his name with mine. At night we lay together, and by midnight he was gone, and I could rise and step into my woods. Often my lion would pace beside me. It was the deepest pleasure, walking in the cool air, the damp leaves brushing our legs. Sometimes I would stop to harvest this flower or that. But the flower I truly wanted, I waited for. 1 month I let go by after Hermes and I first spoke, and then another. I did not want him watching. He had no place in this. It was mine. I did not bring a torch. My eyes shone in the dark better than any owl's. I walked through the shadowed trees, through the quiet orchards, the groves and brakes, across the sands and up the cliffs. The birds were still and the beasts. All the sounds were the air among the leaves and my own breath. And there it was, hidden in the leaf mould, beneath the ferns and mushrooms. A flower small as a fingernail, white as milk. The blood of that giant which my father had spilled in the sky. I plucked a stem out of the tangle. The roots clung hard a moment before yielding. They were black and thick, and smelled of metal and salt. The flower had no name that I knew, so I called it Moly, root, from the antique language of the gods.
Oh, father, did you know the gift you gave me? For that flower, so delicate it could dissolve beneath your stepping foot, carried within it the unyielding power of apotrope, the turning aside of evil. Cursebreaker. Ward and bulwark against ruin, worshipped like a god, for it was pure. The only thing in all the world you could be certain would not turn against you. Day by day, the island bloomed. My garden climbed the walls of my house, breathed its scent through my windows. I left the shutters open by then. I did what I liked. If you had asked me, I would have said I was happy. Yet always I remembered. Cold smoke, marked with my name.
Chapter 9. It was morning, the sun just over the trees, and I was in the garden cutting anemones for my table. The pigs snuffled at their slops. One of the boars grew fractious, shoving and grunting to air his authority. I caught his eye. Yesterday I saw you blowing bubbles in the stream, and the day before the spotted sow sent you off with a bitten ear and nothing more, so you may behave. He huffed at the dirt, then flopped on his belly and subsided. Do you always talk to pigs when I am gone? Hermes stood in his travelling cloak, his broad-brimmed hat tilted over his eyes.
"I like to think of it the other way round," I said.
"What brings you out in the honest daylight?"
"A ship is coming," he said.
"I thought you might want to know."
I stood.
"Here?
What ship?"
He smiled. He always liked seeing me at a loss.
"What will you give me if I tell you?"
"Be gone," I said. "I prefer you in the dark."
He laughed and vanished.
I made myself go about the morning as I usually would, in case Hermes watched, but I felt the tension in myself, the taut anticipation. I could not keep my eyes from flicking to the horizon. A ship with visitors that amused Hermes. Who?
They came at mid-afternoon, resolving out of the bright mirror of the waves. The vessel was 10 times the size of Glaucus's, and even at a distance I could see how fine it was, sleek and brightly painted, with a huge rearing prow-piece. It cut through the sluggish air straight towards me, its oarsmen rowing steadily. As they approached, I felt that old, eager jump in my throat. They were mortals. The sailors dropped the anchor, and a single man leapt over the low side and splashed ashore. He followed the seam of beach and woods until he found a path, a small pig trail that wound upwards through the acanthus spears and laurel groves past the thornbush thicket. I lost sight of him then, but I knew where the trail led. I waited. He checked when he saw my line, but only for a moment. With his shoulders straight and unbowed, he knelt to me in the clearing's grass. I realized I knew him. He was older. The skin of his face more lined, but it was the same man, his head still shaved, his eyes clear. Of all the mortals on the earth, there are only a few the gods will ever hear of. Consider the practicalities. By the time we learn their names, they're dead. They must be meteors indeed to catch our attention. The merely good? You are dust to us.
"Lady," he said, "I am sorry to trouble you."
"You have not been troubled yet," I said. "Please stand if you like." If he noticed my mortal voice, he gave no sign. He stood up. I would not say gracefully, for he was too solidly built for that, but easily, like a door swinging on a well-fitted hinge. His eyes met mine without flinching. He was used to gods, I thought, and witches too.
"What brings the famous Daedalus to my shores?"
"I am honored he would know me."
His voice was steady as a west wind, warm and constant.
"I come as a messenger from your sister. She is with child, and her time approaches. She asks that you attend her delivery."
I eyed him. "Are you certain you have come to the right place, messenger? There has never been love between my sister and me."
"She does not send to you for love," he said.
The breeze blew, carrying the scent of linden flowers. At its back, the muddy stink of the pigs. "I'm told my sister has bred 6 children, each more easily than the last. She cannot die in childbirth, and her infants thrive with the strength of her blood. So why does she need me?" He spread his hands, deft-looking and thickened with muscle.
"Pardon, lady, I can say no more, but she bids me to tell you that if you do not help her, there is no one else who can. It is your art she wants, lady, yours alone."
So Pasiphae had heard of my powers and decided they could be of use to her.
It was the first compliment I had had from her in my life. "Your sister instructed me to say, besides, that she has permission from your father for you to go. Your exile is lifted for this."
I frowned. This was all strange, very strange. What was important enough to make her go to my father? And if she needed more magic, why not summon Perseus? It seemed like some sort of trick. But I could not understand why my sister would bother. I was no threat to her. I could feel myself being tempted. I was curious, of course, but it was more than that. This was a chance to show her what I had become. Whatever trap she might set, she could not catch me in it.
Not anymore. "What a relief to hear of my reprieve," I said.
"I cannot wait to be freed from my terrible prison." The terraced hills around us glowed with spring. He did not smile.
"There is one more thing. I am instructed to tell you that our path lies through the straits."
What straits? But I saw the answer in his face. The dark stains under his eyes, the weary grief. Sickness rose in my throat. Where Scylla dwells. He nodded.
She ordered you to come that way as well?
She did. How many did you lose?
12,
he said. We were not fast enough.
How could I have forgotten who my sister was? She would never just ask a favor. Always she must have the whip to drive you to her will. I could see her bragging and laughing to Minos. Circe's a fool for mortals, I hear. I hated her more than I ever had. It was all so cruelly done. I imagined stalking into my house, slamming the door on its great hinge. Too bad, Pasiphae. You will have to find some other fool.
But then 6 more men, or 12, would die. I scoffed at myself.
Who said they would live if I went? I knew no spells to ward off monsters, and Scylla would be enraged when she saw me. I would only bring more of her fury upon them.
Daedalus was watching me, his face shadowed. Far beyond his shoulder, my father's chariot was slipping into the sea. In their dusty palace rooms, astronomers even now were tracking its sunset glory, hoping their calculations would hold. Their bony knees trembled, thinking of the headman's axe. I gathered up my clothes, my bag of simples. I closed the door behind me. There was nothing else to do. The lion could take care of herself. I am ready, I said. The ship's style was new to me, trim and low in the water. Its hull was beautifully painted with rolling waves and curving dolphins, and by the stern an octopus stretched its snaky arms. As the captain hauled at the anchor, I walked up to the prow to examine the figurehead I had seen. It was a young girl in a dancing dress. Her face bore a look of happy surprise, eyes wide, lips just parting, her hair loose over her shoulders. Her small hands were clasped to her chest, and she was poised on her toes as if music were about to start. Each detail of it, the curls of her hair, the folds of cloth, was so vivid that I thought at any moment she truly would step into the air. Yet that was not even the real miracle. The work showed, I cannot say how, a glimpse of the girl's self, the searching cleverness in her gaze, the determined grace of her brow, her excitement and innocence, easy and green as grass. I did not have to ask whose hands had shaped it. A wonder of the mortal world, my brother had called Daedalus. But this was a wonder in any world. I pored over its pleasures, finding a new one every moment. The small dimple in her chin, the knob of her ankle, coltish with youth. A marvel it was, but also a message. I had been raised at my father's feet and knew a boast of power when I saw it. Another king, if he had such a treasure, would keep it under guard in his most fortified hall. Minos and Pasiphae had set it on a ship, exposed it to brine and sun, to pirates and sea rack and monsters, as if to say, "This is a trifle. We have 1,000 more, and better yet, the man who makes them." The drumbeat drew my attention away. The sailors had taken their benches, and I felt the first shudders of motion. The harbour waters began to slide past us. My island dwindled behind. I turned my eye to the men filling the deck around me. There were 38 in all. At the stern, 5 guards paced in capes and golden armour. Their noses were lumpen, twisted from too many breakings. I remembered Aeetes sneering at them. Minos's thugs dressed up like princes. The rowers were the pick of Knossos's mighty navy. So large, the oars looked dainty in their hands. Around them, the other sailors moved swiftly, raising a canopy to keep off the sun. At Minos and Pasiphae's wedding, the huddle of mortals I had glimpsed seemed distant and blurred, as alike as leaves on a tree. But here, beneath the sky, each face was relentlessly distinct. This one was thick, this one was smooth, this one bearded with a hooked nose and narrow chin. There were scars and calluses and scrapes, age lines and cowlicks of hair. One had draped a wet cloth over his neck against the heat. Another wore a bracelet made by childish hands, and a third had a head shaped like a bullfinch's.
It made me dizzy to realize that this was but a fraction of all the men the world had bred. How could such variation endure? Such endless iteration of minds and faces? Did the earth not go mad?
May I bring you a seat? Daedalus said. I turned, glad for the respite of his single face.
Daedalus could not have been called handsome, but his features had a pleasing sturdiness.
I prefer to stand, I said. I gestured to the Praupis.
She is beautiful. He inclined his head, a man used to such compliments.
Thank you.
Tell me something. Why does my sister have you under watch?
When we had stepped on board the largest guard, the leader had roughly searched him.
Ah, he smiled slightly.
Minos and Pacify fear that I do not fully appreciate their hospitality.
I remember Aeetes saying,
Pacify has him trapped.
Surely you might have escaped them on the way.
I might escape them often, but Pacify has something of mine I will not leave.
I waited for more, but it did not come. His hands rested on the rail. The knuckles were battered, the fingers hatched with white nicks of scars, as though he had plunged them into broken wood or shards of glass.
In the straits, I said.
You saw Scylla?
Not clearly. The cliff was hidden in spray and fog, and she moved too quickly, six heads striking twice with teeth as long as a leg.
I had seen the stains on the deck. They had been scrubbed, yet the blood had soaked deep. All that was left of 12 lives. My stomach twisted with guilt.
As Pacifier had meant it to.
You should know I was the one who did it, I said. The one who made Scylla what she is. That is why I am exiled, and why my sister had you take this route. I watched his face for surprise or disgust, even terror. But he only nodded, she told me.
Of course she had. She was a poisoner at heart.
She wanted to be sure I came as villain, not savior. Except this time it was nothing but the truth.
There is something I do not understand, I said. For all my sister's cruelty, she is not often foolish. Why would she risk you on this errand?
I earned my place here myself. I am forbidden to say more, but when we arrive in Crete, I think you will understand. He hesitated.
Do you know if there is anything we can do against her?
Scylla. Above us, the sun burned away the last shreds of cloud. The men panted even under the canopy.
I don't know, I said. I will try.
We stood in silence beside that leaping girl as the sea fell away. That night we camped on the shore of a flourishing green land. Around their fires the men were tense and quiet, muffled by dread. I could hear their whispers, the wine sloshing as they passed it. No man wanted to lie awake imagining tomorrow. Daedalus had marked out a small space for me with a bedroll, but I left it. I could not bear to be hemmed in by all those breathing, anxious bodies. It was strange to tread upon earth other than my own. Where I expected a grove, there came a deer thicket. Where I thought there would be pigs, a badger showed its teeth. The terrain was flatter than my island, the forests low, the flowers in different combinations. I saw a bitter almond tree, a flowered cherry. My fingers itched to harvest their fat power. I bent and plucked a poppy, just to hold its color in my hand. I could feel the throb of its black seeds. Come, make us into magic. I did not obey. I was thinking of Scylla, trying to piece together an image from everything I had heard of her. Six mouths, six heads, 12 dangling feet. But the more I tried, the more it slipped away. Instead, I saw her face as it had been in our halls, round and laughing. The curve of her wrist had been like a swan's neck. Her chin would tilt delicately to whisper some morsel of gossip in my sister's ear. Beside them, my brother Perseus had sat smirking. He used to toy with Scylla's hair, winding it around his finger. She would turn and slap his shoulder, and the sound would echo across the hall. They both laughed, for they loved to be at the center always. And I remembered wondering why my sister did not mind such displays. For she allowed none near Perseus but herself, yet she only watched and smiled. I thought I had passed those years in my father's halls sightless as a mole,
But now more details came back to me. The green robe Scylla used to wear at special feasts. Her silver sandals with lapis lazuli on the strap. There was a gold pin with a cat at its end that kept her hair up from her neck. She had it from Thebes, I thought. Thebes of Egypt, some admirer there, some beast-headed god. What had happened to that bauble? Was it still lying on the grass beside the water with her discarded clothes? I had come to a small rise, crowded with black poplars. I walked among their furrowed trunks. One of them had been struck recently by lightning, and the bole bore a charred, oozing wound. I put my finger to the burnt sap. I could feel its force, and was sorry I had not brought an extra bottle to gather it. It made me think of Daedalus, that upright man with fire in his bones. What was the thing he could not leave behind? His face, when he had spoken of it, had been careful. His words placed as if they were tiled in a fountain. It must be a lover, I thought. Some pretty handmaid of the palace, or else some handsome groom. My sister could smell such intrigues a year away. Perhaps she had even ordered them to his bed, as the hook to catch the fish. But as I tried to picture their faces, I realized I did not believe in them. Daedalus did not seem like a man newly heartstruck, nor an old lover with a wife of many years molded to his side. I could not imagine him in a pair, only singular and alone. Gold, then, an invention he had made? I thought, if I can keep him alive tomorrow, perhaps I will find out. The moon was passing overhead, and the night with it. Daedalus's voice spoke again in my ears. Her teeth are long as a leg. Cold fear ran through me. What had I been thinking? That I could stand against such a creature? Daedalus's throat would be ripped open, my own flesh snatched up in her mouths. What would I become after she was finished with me? Ash, smoke, immortal bones dragging across the bottom of the sea? My feet had found the shore. I walked it, cool and grey. I listened to the murmur of the waves, the cries of the nightbirds. But if I am honest, I was listening for more than that. The quick rush through the air that I had come to know. Each second I hoped Hermes would land poised before me, laughing, goading. So, witch of Aiaia, what will you do tomorrow? I thought of begging him for help, the sand beneath my knees, my palms upstretched. Or perhaps I would knock him down to the earth and please him that way, for he loved most of all to be surprised. I could hear the tale he would tell later. She was so desperate, she was on me like a cat. He should lie with my sister, I thought. They would like each other. It struck me, for the first time, that perhaps he had. Perhaps they lay together often and laughed at my dullness. Perhaps all this had been his idea, and that was why he had come this morning, to taunt me and gloat. My mind played over our conversation, sifting it for meaning. See how quickly he made one a fool. That was what he desired most of all, to drive others into doubt, keep them wondering and fretting, stumbling behind his dancing feet. I spoke out to the darkness, to any silent wings that hovered there. I do not care if you lie with her. Have Perseus too, he is the handsomer. You will never be such as I am jealous for. Perhaps he was listening, perhaps he was not. It did not matter, he would not come. It was the better jest to see what extremes I would try, to see how I would curse and flounder. My father would not help me either. Aeetes might, if only to feel the flex of his power, but he was a world away. I could no more reach him than I could fly into the air. I was even more desolate than my sister, I thought. I came for her, but there was no one who would come for me. The thought was steadying. After all, I had been alone my whole life. Aeetes, Glaucus, these were only pauses in the long stretch of my solitude. Kneeling, I dug my fingers into the sand. I felt the rub of grains beneath my nails. A memory drifted through me. My father speaking our old hopeless lore to Glaucus. No god may undo what another has done. But I was the one who had done it. The moon passed over us. The waves pressed their cold mouths to my feet. Elecampane, I thought. Ash and olive and silver fir. Henbane with burnt cornel bark. And at the base of all, moly. Moly, to break a curse, to ward off that evil thought of mine that had changed her in the first place. I brushed away the sand and stood, my bag of simples hanging from my shoulder. As I walked, the bottles rang softly like goats shaking their bells. The smells wafted around me, familiar as my own skin. Earth and clinging roots, salt and iron blood. The next morning the men were grey and silent. One oiled the oarlocks to keep them from squeaking, another scrubbed at the stained deck. His face red, though whether from sun or grief I could not tell. In the stern, a third with a black beard was praying and pouring wine onto the waves. None looked at me. I was Pacify's sister after all, and they had long since given up any thought of help from her. But I could feel their tension pressing thickly into the air, the choking terror rising in them moment by moment. Death was coming. Do not think of it, I told myself. If you hold firm, none will die today. The guard captain had yellow eyes set in a swollen face. His name was Polydamas, and he was large, but I was a goddess, and we were of a height. I need your cloak, I said to him, and your tunic at once. His eyes narrowed. I could see the reflexive no in them. I would come to know this type of man, jealous of his little power, to whom I was only a woman. Why? He said. Because I do not desire the death of your comrades. Do you feel otherwise? The words carried up the deck, and 37 pairs of eyes looked up. He stripped off his clothes and handed them to me. They were the finest on board, extravagant white-combed wool edged with deep purple, sweeping the deck. Daedalus had come to stand by me. May I help? I gave him the cloak to hold up. Behind it, I disrobed and drew on the tunic. The armholes gaped and the waist billowed. The smell of sour human flesh enveloped me. Will you help me with the cloak? Daedalus draped it around me, fastening it by its golden octopus pin. The cloth hung heavy as blankets, loose and slipping from my shoulders. I'm sorry to say, you don't look much of a man. I'm not meant to look like a man, I said. I'm meant to look like my brother. Scylla loved him once. Perhaps she still does. I touched the paste I had prepared to my lips, hyacinth and honey, ash flowers and aconite crushed with the bark of walnuts. I had cast illusions on animals and plants before, but never upon myself, and I felt a sudden, plunging doubt. I forced the thought away. Fear of failure was the worst thing for any spell. I focused instead on Percy's, his lounging, smug face, his puffy muscles and thick neck, his long-fingered, indolent hands. Each of these I summoned in turn, willing them into me. When I opened my eyes, Daedalus was staring.
Put the steadiest men at the oars, I said to him. My voice had changed too. It was deep and swollen with divine hauteur. They must not stop for anything, no matter what.
He nodded. He was holding a sword, and I saw that the other men were similarly armed with spears and daggers and crude cudgels.
No, I said. I raised my voice for the whole ship. She is immortal. Weapons are useless, and you will need free hands to keep the ship moving forward.
At once came the rasp of blades being sheathed, the thunk of spears set down. Even Polydamas, in his borrowed tunic, obeyed. I always wanted to laugh. I had never been given such deference in my life. Is that what it was like to be Percy's? But already I could make out the faint outline of the straits on the horizon. I turned to Daedalus.
Listen, I said. There is a chance that the spell will not fool her and she will know me. If she does, be sure you are not standing near. Be sure none of the men are.
The mist came first. It closed in, wet and heavy, obscuring the cliffs, then the sky itself. We could see little, and the sound of the sucking whirlpool filled our ears. That whirlpool was, of course, the reason Scylla had chosen these streets. To avoid its pull, ships must steer close to the opposite cliff. It brought them right beneath her teeth. We pushed on through the thick air. As we entered the straits, the sound grew hollowed, echoing off the stone walls. My skin, the deck, the rail, Every surface was slick with spray. The water foamed and an oar scraped the rock face. A small sound, but the men flinched as if it were a thunderclap. Above us, buried in the fog, was the cave and Scylla. We moved. I thought we did, but in such greyness it was impossible to tell how far or fast. The oarsmen were trembling with effort and fear, and the oarlocks creaked despite their oil. I counted the moments. Surely we were beneath her now. She would be creeping to the cave's opening and smelling out the plumpest. The sweat was drenching the men's tunics, their shoulders hunched. Those not rowing crouched behind coils of rope, the mast space, any cover they could find. I strained my eyes upwards, and she came. She was grey as the air, as the cliff itself. I had always imagined she would look like something, a snake or an octopus, a shark. But the truth of her was overwhelming, an immensity that my mind fought to take in. Her necks were longer than ship masts. Her six heads gaped, hideously lumpen like melted lava stone. Black tongues licked her sword-length teeth. Her eyes were fixed on the men, oblivious in their sweating fear. She crept closer, slipping over the rocks. A reptilian stench struck me, foul as squirming nests underground. Her necks wove a little in the air, and from one of her mouths I saw a gleaming strand of saliva stretch and fall. Her body was not visible. It was hidden back in the mist with her legs, those hideous, boneless things that Zelini had spoken of so long ago. Hermes had told me how they clung inside her cave like the curled ends of hermit crabs when she lowered herself to feed. Her necks had begun to ripple and bunch back on themselves. She was gathering to strike. "Scylla!" I cried with my god's voice. She screamed. The sound was a piercing chaos like a thousand dogs howling at once. Some of the rowers dropped their oars to cover their ears. At the edge of my vision, I saw Daedalus push one to the side and take his place. I could not worry for him now. "Scylla!" I cried again. "It is Perseus! I have sailed a year to find you!" She stared at me, her eyes dead holes in grey flesh. From one of her throats came a strangled sound. She had no vocal cords anymore. "My bitch sister is exiled for what she did to you," I said. "But she deserved worse. What vengeance do you desire? Tell me. Persephone and I will do it." I was making myself speak slowly. Each moment was another beat of the oars. Those 12 eyes pinned me. I could see the stains of old blood around her mouth, the shreds of flesh still hanging from her teeth. I felt my gorge rise. "We have been searching out a cure for you, a powerful drug to turn you back. We miss you as you were." My brother would never have talked so, but it did not seem to matter. She was listening, coiling and uncoiling along the rocks, keeping pace with our ship. How many oar strokes had passed? 12? 100? I could see her dull mind working. A god? What does a god do here? "Scylla," I said, "will you have it? Will you have our cure?" She hissed. The breath from her gullet was rotten and hot as fire. But already I had lost her attention. Two of her heads had turned to watch the men at their oars. The others were beginning to follow. I saw her necks bunch again. "Look!" I cried. "Here it is!" I lifted the open bottle in the air. Only one neck turned back to see, but that was enough. I hefted the draught and threw it. It hit her in the back of her teeth, and I watched her throat ripple as she swallowed. I spoke the spell to change her back. For a moment, nothing happened. Then she shrieked, a sound to crack open the world. Her heads whipped, and she dived towards me. I had time only to grab hold of the mast. "Run!" I thought at Daedalus. She struck the ship's stern. The deck popped like driftwood, and a length of rail tore away. Splinters flew. Men were tumbling around me, and I would have fallen if I had not been gripping the mast. I heard Daedalus crying orders but could not see him. Already her adder necks were rearing back again, and this time I knew she would not miss. She would strike the deck itself, crack the ship in half, then pluck us from the water one by one. But the blow did not come. Her head smacked into the waves behind us. She jerked, lunging against the water, snapping those huge jaws like a dog fighting its leash. It took my muddy brain a moment to understand. She had reached the end of her tether. Her legs could stretch no farther from their hold in her cave. We were past. She seemed to realize it at the same time I did. She screamed in rage, slamming our wake with her heads, throwing up huge waves. The boat tipped, gulping sea over its low sides and back. Men grappled at the ropes, their legs trailing in the water, but they held on, and each moment we were further away. She beat the cliffside, howling her frustration, until the mist closed over her, and she was gone. I leaned my forehead against the mast. The clothes were slipping off my shoulders, the cloak dragged at my neck and my skin prickled with heat. The spell had ended. I was myself again. Goddess. Daedalus was kneeling. The other men were ranged on their knees behind, their faces thick and haggard, scarred and bearded and burnt, were grey and shaken. They bore scrapes and lumps from being thrown across the deck. I scarcely saw them. Before me was Scylla, her ravening mouths and those dead, empty eyes. She had not known me, I thought, not as Perseus or anything. Only the novelty of my being a god had momentarily checked her. Her mind was gone. Lady, Daedalus said, we will make sacrifice to you every day of our lives for this. You have saved us. You brought us through the straits alive. The men echoed him, murmuring prayers, their great hands lifted like platters. A few pressed their foreheads to the deck, in the Eastern style. Such worship was the payment my kind demanded for services rendered. The bile rose in my throat. You fools, I said. I am the one who made that creature. I did it for pride and vain delusion, and you thank me? 12 of your men are dead for it, and how many thousands more to come? That drug I gave her is the strongest I have. Do you understand, mortals? The words seared the air, the light from my eyes beat down upon them. I will never be free of her. She cannot be changed back, not now, not ever. What she is, she will remain. She will feast on your kind for all eternity. So get up and get to your oars, and let me not hear you speak of your imbecile gratitude, or I will make you sorry for it. They cringed and shook like the weak vessels they were, stuttering to their feet and creeping away. Above, the sky was cloudless, and the heat pinned the air to the deck. I yanked off the cloak. I wanted the sun to burn me. I wanted it to scorch me down to bone.
Chapter 10. For 3 days I stood at that prow. We did not stay over on an island again. The oarsmen worked in shifts, sleeping on the deck. Daedalus repaired the rail, then took his turn among them. He was unfailingly polite, offering food and wine, a bedroll. But he did not linger. What did I expect? I had loosed my wrath on him as if I were my father. One more thing that I had ruined. We reached the island of Crete just before noon on the 7th day. The sun threw off great sheets of light from the water, turning the sail incandescent. Around us, ships crowded the bay. Mycenaean barges, Phoenician traders, Egyptian galleys, Hittites and Ethiopians and Hesperians. All the merchants who passed through these waters wanted the rich city of Knossos as their customer, and Minos knew it. He welcomed them with wide, safe moorings and agents to collect for the privilege of using them. The inns and brothels belonged to Minos also, and the gold and jewels flowed like a great river to his hand. The captain aimed us squarely at the first mooring, kept open for royal ships. The noise and motion of the docks clattered around me. Men running, shouting, heaving boxes onto decks. Polydamas spoke a word to the harbour master, then turned to us. You are to come at once, you and the craftsmen both. Daedalus gestured that I should go first. We followed Polydamas up the docks. Before us, the huge limestone stairs wavered in the heat. Men streamed past us, servants and nobles alike, their shoulders sun-darkened and bare. Above,
The palace of mighty Knossos glowed on its hill like a hive. We climbed. I heard Daedalus's breaths behind me and Polydamas's in front. The steps were worn smooth from years of endless hurrying feet. At last we reached the top and crossed the threshold into the palace. The blinding light vanished. Cool darkness flowed over my skin. Daedalus and Polydamas hesitated, blinking. My eyes were not mortal and needed no time to adjust. I saw at once the beauty of that place, even greater than the last time I had come. The palace was like a hive indeed, each hall leading to an ornate chamber and each chamber to another hall. Windows were cut in the walls to let in thick squares of golden sun. Intricate murals unrolled themselves on every side, dolphins and laughing women, boys gathering flowers, and deep-chested bulls tossing their horns. Outside, in tiled pavilions, silver fountains ran, and servants hurried among columns reddened with hematite. Over every doorway hung a labrys, the double axe of Minos. I remembered that he had given Pasiphae a necklace with a labrys pendant at their wedding. She had held it as if it were a worm, and when the ceremony came, her neck bore only her own onyx and amber. Polydamas guided us through the twisting passages towards the queen's quarters. There it was more lavish still, the paintings rich with ochre and blue copper, but the windows had been covered over. Instead, there were golden torches and leaping braziers. Cunningly recessed skylights let in light, but no glimpse of sky. Daedalus's work, I supposed. Pasiphae had never liked our father's prying gaze. Polydamas stopped before a door scrawled with flowers and waves. "The queen is within," he said, and knocked. We stood in the still and shadowed air. I could hear nothing beyond that heavy wood, but I became aware of Daedalus's ragged breath beside me. His voice was low. "Lady," he said, "I have offended you and I am sorry. But I am sorrier still for what you will find inside. I wish..." The door opened. A handmaid stood breathless before us, her hair pinned in the Cretan style at the top of her head. "The queen is in her labors," she began, but my sister's voice cut across her. "Is it them?" At the room's center, Pasiphae lay on a purple couch. Her skin gleamed with sweat, and her belly was shockingly distended, swollen out like a tumor from her slender frame. I had forgotten how vivid she was, how beautiful. Even in her pain she commanded the room, drawing all the light to herself, leeching the world around her pale as mushrooms. She had always been the most like our father. I stepped through the door. 12 dead, I said. 12 men for a joke, and your vanity. She smirked, rising up to meet me. It seemed only fair to let Scylla have her chance at you, don't you think? Let me guess. You tried to change her back. She laughed at what she saw in my face. Oh, I knew you would. You made a monster, and all you can think of is how sorry you are. Alas, poor mortals, I have put them in danger. She was as quicksilver cruel as ever. It was a relief of sorts. It was you who put them in danger, I said. But you are the one who failed to save them. Tell me, did you weep as you watched them die? I forced my voice to stay even. You are in error, I said. I saw no men die. The 12 were lost on the way out. She did not even pause. No matter. More will die on every ship that passes. She tapped a finger to her chin. How many do you think it will be? In a year? 100? 1,000? She was showing her mink teeth, trying to get me to melt like all those naiads in Oceanus's halls. But there was no wound she could give me that I had not already given myself. This is not the way to get my help, Pasiphae. Your help? Please. I am the one who got you off that sand spit of an island. I hear you sleep with lions and boars for company. But that's an improvement for you, isn't it, after Glaucus the squid? If you don't need me, I said, I will happily go back to my sand spit. Oh, come, sister, don't be so sour. It's only a jest. And look how grown you are, slipping past Scylla. I knew I was right to call you instead of that braggart Aetes. You can stop making that face. I've already set aside gold for the families of the men who were lost. Gold does not give back a life. I can tell you are not a queen.
Believe me, most of the families would rather have the gold. Now, are there any other... But she did not finish. She grunted and dug her nails into the arm of a handmaiden kneeling at her feet. I had not noticed the girl before, but I saw now that the skin of her arm was purple and smeared with blood. Out, I said to her. Out, all. This is no place for you. I felt a spurt of satisfaction at how fast the attendants fled. I faced my sister. Well, her face was still contorted with pain. What do you think? It's been days and it hasn't even moved. It needs to be cut out. She threw back her robes, revealing the swollen skin. A ripple passed across the surface of her belly from left to right, then back again. I knew little of childbirth. I had never attended my mother, nor any of my cousins. A few things I remembered hearing. Have you tried pushing from your knees?
Of course I've tried it, she screamed as the spasm came again. I've had 8 children, just cut the fucking thing out of me.
From my bag, I drew out a pain draft.
Are you stupid? I'm not going to be put to sleep like some infant. Give me the willow bark.
Willow is for headaches, not surgery.
Give it to me.
I gave it, and she drained the bottle.
Daedalus, she said. Take up the knife.
I had forgotten he was there. He stood in the doorway, very still.
Pacifier, I said. Do not be perverse. You sent for me, now use me.
She laughed, a savage sound.
You think I trust you with that? You are for after. Anyway, it is fitting that Daedalus should do it. He knows why, don't you, craftsman? Will you tell my sister now, or shall we let it be a surprise?
I will do it, Daedalus said to me. It is my task. He stepped to the table and took up the knife. The blade was honed to a hair's edge. She seized his wrist.
Just remember, she said. Remember what I will do if you think to go astray.
He nodded mildly, though for the first time I saw something like anger in his eyes. She drew her nail across the lower portion of her belly, leaving a red slice.
There,
she said. The room was hot and close. I felt my hands slicked with sweat. How Daedalus held that knife so steady, I do not know. The tip bit into my sister's skin and blood welled, red and gold mixed. His arms were taut with effort, his jaw set. It took a long time, for my sister's immortal flesh fought back. But Daedalus cut on with utmost concentration, and at last the glistening muscles parted and the flesh beneath gave way. The path lay bare to my sister's womb.
Now you, she said, looking at me. Her voice was hoarse and torn. Get it out!
The couch beneath her was sopping. The room was filled with the overripe stink of her ambrosial blood. Her belly had stopped rippling when Daedalus began to cut. It was tensed now, as if it were waiting, I thought. I looked at my sister. What is in there? Her golden hair was matted.
What do you think? A baby?
I put my hands to that gap in her flesh. The blood pulsed hot against me. Slowly, I pressed through the muscles and the wet. My sister made a strangled croak. I searched in that slickness, and at last there it was, the soft mass of an arm. A relief. I could not even say what I had feared. Just a baby.
I have it, I said.
My fingers inched upwards for purchase. I remember telling myself that I must be careful to find its head. I did not want it twisted when I began to pull.
Pain burst in my fingers, so shocking I could not cry out. I thought some scrambled thing, that Daedalus must have dropped the scalpel inside of her, that a bone had broken in her labor and stabbed me. But the pain clamped harder, driving deep into my hand, grinding. Teeth. It was teeth.
I did scream then. I tried to jerk my hand away, but it had me fast in its jaws. In a panic, I yanked. The lips of my sister's wound parted, and the thing slid forth.
It thrashed like a fish on a hook, and muck flew across our faces. My sister was shrieking. The thing was like an anchor dragging on my arm. I felt my finger joints tearing. I screamed again, the agony white hot, and fell on top of the creature, scrabbling for its throat with my hand.
When I found it, I bore down, pinning its body beneath me, its heels beat on the stone, its head twisted side to side. At last I saw it clear. The nose broad and flat, shining wetly with birth fluid. The shaggy,
thick face crowned with two sharp horns. Below, the froggy baby body bucked with unnatural strength. Its eyes were black and fixed on mine. Dear gods, I thought. What is it? The creature made a choking sound and opened its mouth. I snatched my hand away, bloody and mangled. I had lost my last two fingers and part of a third. The thing's jaw worked, swallowing what it had taken. Its chin wrenched in my grip, trying to bite me again. A shadow beside me, Daedalus, pale and blood-spattered. I'm here. The knife, I said. What are you doing? Do not hurt him, he must live! My sister was struggling on her couch, but she could not rise with her muscles cut. The cord, I said. It still ran gristle-thick between the creature and my sister's womb. He sawed at it. My knees were wet where I knelt. My hands were a mass of broken pain and blood. Now a blanket, I said. A sack. He brought a thick wool coverlet, laid it on the floor beside me. With my torn fingers, I dragged the thing into its center. It fought still, moaning angrily, and twice I nearly lost it, for it seemed to have grown stronger even in those moments. But Daedalus gathered up the corners, and when he had them, I jerked my hands away. The creature thrashed in the blanket folds, unable to find purchase. I took the ends from him, lifting it off the floor. I could hear the rasp of Daedalus's breath. A cage, he said. We need a cage. Get one, I said. I will hold it. He ran. Inside its sack, the creature twisted like a snake. I saw its limbs lined against the fabric, the thick head, the points of horns. Daedalus returned with a birdcage, the finches still fluttering inside, but it was stout and large enough. I stuffed the blanket in, and he clanged shut the door. He threw another blanket over it, and the creature was hidden. I looked at my sister. She was covered in blood, her belly a slaughter yard. The drips fell wetly to the sodden rug beneath. Her eyes were wild. You did not hurt it. I stared at her. Are you mad? It tried to eat my hand. Tell me how such an abomination came to be. Stitch me up. No, I said. You will tell me, or I will let you bleed yourself dry. Bitch, she said. But she was wheezing. The pain was wearing her away. Even my sister had an end in her, a place she could not go. We stared at each other, yellow eyes to yellow. Well, Daedalus, she said at last. It is your moment. Tell my sister whose fault this creature is. He looked at me, face weary and streaked with blood. Mine, he said. It is mine. I am the reason this beast lives. From the cage, a wet, chewing sound. The finches had gone silent. The god sent a bull, pure white, to bless the kingdom of Minos. The queen admired the creature and desired to see it more closely. Yet it ran from any who came near. So I built the hollow likeness of a cow, with a place inside for her to sit. I gave it wheels so we might roll it to the beach while the creature slept. I thought it would only be... It did not... Oh, please, my sister spat. The world will be ended before you stammer to your finish. I fucked the sacred bull, all right? Now get the thread. I stitched my sister up. Soldiers came. Their faces carefully blank and bore the cage to an inner closet. My sister called after them. No one goes near it without my word, and give it something to eat. Silent handmaids rolled up the soaked rug and carried off the ruined couch as if they did such work every day. They burned frankincense and sweet violets to mask the stench, then bore my sister to the bath. The gods will punish you, I had told her while I sewed, but she had only laughed with a giddy lushness. Don't you know? She had said. The gods love their monsters. The words made me start. You talk to Hermes. Hermes? What does he have to do with it? I don't need some Olympian to tell me what is plain before my face. Everyone knows it. She smirked. Except for you, as usual. A presence at my side brought me back. Daedalus. We were alone for the first time since he had come to my island. There were drops of brown spattered across his forehead. His arms were smeared to the elbow. May I bandage your fingers? No, I said. Thank you, they will fix themselves. Lady, he hesitated. I am in your debt for all my days. If you had not come, it would have been me.
His shoulders were taut, tensed as if against a blow. The last time he had thanked me, I had stormed at him. But now I understood more. He, too, knew what it was to make monsters. I'm glad it was not, I said. I nodded at his hands, crusted and stained like everything else. Yours cannot grow back. He lowered his voice. Can the creature be killed? I thought of my sister, shrieking to be careful. I don't know. Pacifier seems to believe it can. But even so, it is the child of the White Bull. It may be guarded by a god, or it may bring down a curse upon any who harm it. I need to think. He rubbed at his scalp, and I saw the hope of an easy solution drain from him. I must go make another cage, then. That one won't hold it long. He left. The gore was drying stiff upon my cheeks, and my arms were greasy with the creature's stink. I felt clouded and heavy, sick from the pollution of so much blood. If I called the handmaids, they would bring me to a bath, but I knew that would not be enough. Why had my sister made such an abomination? And why summon me? Most Naiads would have fled, but one of the Nereids might have done it. They were used to monsters. Or Perseus, why had she not called for him? My mind had no answers. It was limp and dulled, useless as my missing fingers. One thought came clear. I must do something. I could not stand by while a horror was loosed upon the world. I had the thought that I should find my sister's workroom. Perhaps there would be something there to help me, some antidote, some great drug of reversal. It was not far, a hall off her bedchamber separated by a curtain. I had never seen another witch's craft room before, and I walked its shelves, expecting I do not know what. 100 grisly things, kraken livers, dragon's teeth, the flayed skin of giants. But all I saw were herbs, and rudimentary ones at that, poisons, poppies, a few healing roots. I had no doubt that my sister could work plenty with them, for her will had always been strong. But she was lazy, and here was the proof. Those few simples were old and weak as dead leaves. They had been collected haphazardly, some in bud, some already withered, cut with any knife at any time of day. I understood something then. My sister might be twice the goddess I was, but I was twice the witch. Her crumbling trash could not help me, and my own herbs from Aiaia would not be enough, strong as they were. The monster was bound to Crete, and whatever would be done, Crete must guide me. I traced back through the halls and corridors to the palace center. There I had seen stairs that ran not to the harbor but inland, to the wide, bright gardens and pavilions, which in turn opened out to distant fields. All around, busy men and women swept flagstones, picked fruits, hefted their baskets of barley. They kept their eyes diligently lowered as I went. I suppose living with Minos and Pacifier, they had grown used to ignoring bloodier things than me. I passed the outlying houses of peasants and shepherds, the groves and grazing herds. The hills were lush and so golden with sun that the light seemed to rise from them, but I did not stop to savor the view. My eyes were fixed upon the black outline that stood against the sky. Mount Dicte, it is called. No bears or wolves or lions dared to tread there, only the sacred goats, their great horns curling like conch shells. Even in the hottest season, the forests remain dark and cool. At night, the huntress Artemis is said to roam its hills with her shining bow, and in one of its shadowed caves, Zeus himself was born and hidden from his devouring father. There are herbs there that grow nowhere else. They are so rare, few have been given names. I could feel them swelling in their hollows, breathing tendrils of magic into the air. A small yellow flower with a green center, a drooping lily that bloomed orange-brown, and best of all, Ferd Dittany, Queen of Healing. I did not walk as a mortal walks, but as a god, and the miles fell away beneath my feet. It was dusk when I reached the foothills and began to climb. The branches laced over me. The shade rose deep as water, tingling across my skin. The whole mountain seemed to hum beneath me. Even bloodied and aching as I was, I felt a spurt of giddiness. I traced the mosses, the hummocks of ground upwards, and at the base of a white poplar, I found a blooming patch of dittany. Its leaves were threaded with power, and I pressed them to my broken fingers. The spell took hold with a word. My hand would be whole by morning. I gathered some of the roots and seeds for my bag and kept on. The stink and weight of blood hung still upon me, and at last I found a pool